One of the most interesting courses that I had as a student in Bible college was a semester of ethics. The academic part of it wasn't the most thrilling by any stretch of the imagination. But what was interesting about the course was, after you got through all the different ethical schools of thought, you got to apply that type of thinking to real-life problems. And some very significant real-life and serious real-life problems. And it caused me to think through what I considered to be right and what I considered to be wrong, and as I applied those things to the various problems, to really confirm what I believed and even make some changes of thoughts here and there. In the next 2 minutes or less, I want to give you an academic summary of my ethics class, and then I want to apply it to some real life problems. And I hope you will be encouraged by it as much as I was for the semester that I had the thing. Ethics, there are two major schools of thought, those who hold the absolutes and those who don't. By absolutes, it's any law, principle, moral, or ethic that describes what's right and what isn't right or what's wrong. Under the absolutes, those who hold to that there are really these types of laws, they're are three major or three subdivisions. The one is the idealists. And idealists believe that when you have absolutes and they conflict with each other, you are to choose the lesser of the two evils. The hierarchicalists look at it in just a little bit different vein. They say, no, you need to choose the greater of the two goods. The view that I hold to, and I think is correct biblically, is that absolutes don't conflict. In the will of God, there are never any of His laws that violate one another. See, the problem with the first two is that you only have two choices. You're choosing the lesser of two evils or the lesser or the greater of two goods. I think there's probably three, four, five, or six other options. And there's one that's always perfect. Now, under the non-absolutes, there's the antinomians. Anti, against, and nomos is the Greek word for law. Antinomian is the person who is against law. And they say, there are none. You do whatever feels good. And even if it doesn't feel good and you want to do it, go right ahead. There are no rights and wrongs. That's the antinomians. The generalists say, well, there are laws, but they're not universal. They don't apply in every situation. They don't apply to all people. They don't apply at all times. But there's some laws out there. And the one that we want to give some consideration to this morning is situationalism, or commonly known as situation ethics. And that is, laws change. But there's one universal law, and that is, do whatever's necessary to preserve life. There can be all kinds of laws that you say, this is right in this situation. But whenever life is in jeopardy and life can be preserved by violating those laws, do what the situation dictates. That's the six schools of ethical thought. Now I want to apply that to some real life situations. Come with me, if you will, to 1 Samuel chapter 21. We want to pick up once again with the story of David and say, well, that's a biblical story. That's not real life. Yes, it is. It was real to David. And while we may not necessarily get in the same predicament that David got into, we get into predicaments. And oftentimes as Christians, we're tempted to move out of the non-conflicting, I'm going to do the will of God and only the will of God, which is the right place to be, and say, well, yeah, I don't know about this one. God wants to preserve my life and I only have these two choices. What am I going to do? David, for a moment, became a person who held to situation ethics. Fortunately, he lived to regret it. 1 Samuel chapter 21, verse 1, "Then came David to Nob." Well, wait a minute. Hold on. Let's start with the word then. When's then? The issue is this. We go back a couple of weeks to our last study, and Jonathan has come out and said to David, "You know what? My dad's after you. You've got no recourse but to flee. He's going to get you if you hang around here, so you protect your life and you take it on the run." And David takes off because it is right to protect his life. He is to be the king, and you just don't go out and flaunt that and say, "Oh, it doesn't really matter what I do." It does matter. So he takes off and he came to Nob. Nob is a little town that was just a couple of miles north of Jerusalem. To Ahimelech, the priest. The tabernacle at this point in time was in this town of Nob. It had been at Shiloh earlier, but the Philistines had destroyed it, and now it's located at Nob. And Ahimelech was afraid at the meeting of David and said unto him, "Why art thou alone and no man with thee?" I'm not sure that the word "afraid" here necessarily means that he thought he was in danger, but he said to himself, something's not right. Maybe there was the way that David was acting. Maybe it was simply, it's not normal that a person comes here by himself. But something doesn't seem right. May I say to you, when you are acting out of the will of God, something is not right. And the world will recognize it quickly. So he asked them a question, "Why are you alone and no man with thee?" And David said unto Ahimelech the priest, "The king hath commanded me a business, and hath said unto me, let no man know anything of the business whereabout I send thee, and what I have commanded thee, and I have appointed my servants to such and such a place." Hold the bus! That's a lie, isn't it? The king did not command him to be about a certain business. On top of that, he didn't have any servants with him. He was all by himself. Why would he lie? Well, maybe he saw that Ahimelech wasn't too certain about this situation, and now maybe David is afraid of the situation. And he said, "Maybe my life is in jeopardy. And I know I shouldn't lie, but do whatever you can to preserve life. So I'll make up this story that sounds legitimate." And it sounded legitimate. And that'll get me by. Verse 3, "Now therefore, what is under thy hand?" The phrase there means, what's within your control or what's available to you? What can you reach out and grasp and disperse with however you desire? "Give me 5 loaves of bread in my hand," or what there is present. I need some food. Me and the guys are hungry. What do you have got? And the priest answered David and said, "There is no common bread under my hand, but there is hallowed bread. If the young men have kept themselves at least from women." Now the bread was supposed to be, it was offered on the table of showbread. It was there for a while, and as it got old, they would replace it with new freshly baked bread. But the bread was to be consumed by the priests only. But there was an exception that came along, that if someone else needed this thing in an emergency situation, if they were pure, if they were clean, they could partake of it. And that's what Ahimelech's saying. Well, are you and the guys ceremonially clean? And David says, Verse 5, "David answered the priest and said unto him, of a truth, women have been kept from us about these 3 days since I came out. And the vessels of the young men are holy, and the bread is in a manner common. Yea, though it were sanctified this day in the vessel." I know this is special bread, but we have a legitimate need here. We fulfill the qualifications, so give us the bread. Well, David probably was ceremonially clean to receive the bread, but he said us. He lied again. Verse 6, so the priest gave him hallowed bread, for there was no bread there but the showbread that was taken from before the Lord to put hot bread in the day when it was taken away. Now a certain man of the servants of Saul was there that day, detained before the Lord. His name was Doeg. How would you like to have that as a name? Here, Doeg, come for supper when your mom calls you. No, that just doesn't work for me. But that was his name, an Edomite. Now, there is some debate as to whether this man was an Edomite by religion or whether he was a Jew simply living in Edom. Nonetheless, he was the chief herdsman that belonged to Saul. And here he was at the temple, or at the tabernacle. He's an Edomite. He belongs to Saul. And David saw him there, apparently. Doeg saw David there. And David says to himself, this cannot be good. This is going to get back to Saul. He's going to find out where I am. I got to get out of here. And David said unto Ahimelech, and is there not here under thine hand spear or sword? For I have neither brought my sword nor my weapons with me, because the king's business required haste. Hold the bus again. There is no business. Another lie from a man who loves the Lord with all his heart. But he's got to protect his life. And the priest said, the sword of Goliath, the Philistine, whom thou slewest in the valley of Elah, behold, it is here wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. If thou wilt take that, take it. For there is no other save that here. And David said, there is none like that, give it me. Now let me read that last phrase by David with two different voice inflections, because it makes a world of difference. Abimelech said, there's none other. And David said, there's none like that. Give it me. In other words, that's the only one you have? Okay, I'll take it. Or, he said, there's none like that. Give it me. The inference being, if I had that sword, I'd have everything I need. Now, I'm going to come back to that in just a minute, but that's really crucial how we understand that. But nonetheless, here's lie number 3 or 4. Verse 10, and David arose and fled that day for fear of Saul, and went to Achish, king of Gath. Let's remember where Gath is. Gath was one of the five principal cities of the, anybody remember? Philistines. In fact, it was the home city of Goliath. Now, what in the world would David be doing going to Gath, the enemy of Israel? May I suggest to you that he said, I got to get out of here. Where am I going to go? Where will Saul never think to look for me? I got it. Gath. I'll go there. Nobody will know me there. Don't have any relatives there. I'll just hide out there. I'll be safe. Saul will never... He's chicken anyway. He'll never go there. Good idea. Man, I came up with a smart one. So we go to Gath. And the servants of Achish, the king of Gath, said unto him, is not this David, the king of the land? Did not they sing one to another of him in dances, saying, Saul hath slain his thousands and David his 10,000s? Uh-oh. They recognize me. The jig is up. My cover is blown. I'm in trouble. Now what am I going to do? There is no one here who will help me. There's no way I can lie about this. What in the world should I do? Verse 12, and David laid up these words in his heart and was sore afraid of Achish, the king of Gath, and he changed his behavior before them. and feigned himself mad in their hands, and scrabbled on the doors of the gate, and let his spittle fall down upon his beard. In other words, he looked like a person who was insane. He's going around on the gates of the city, and he's pretending like he's writing stuff on there, and he's just drooling down on his beard to look like he has no control over any of his bodily functions. He looks like he's absolutely nuts. That's the Hebrew word. If they think that I've lost my marbles, maybe they won't do anything to me. But remember, here's a man of God, and now he gives the testimony that the people of God are nuts. That's a lie. Oh, it works. Then said Achish unto his servants, Lo, ye see, the man is mad. Wherefore then have ye brought him to me? Have I need of madmen that ye have brought this fellow to play the madman in my presence? Shall this fellow come in? Get him out of here. I want no parts of him. And chapter 22, just the first couple of words, David therefore departed thence. He got out by the skin of his teeth. Well, he saved his life. But did he do right? I want to go back quickly and examine these things once again. Was he in the will of God? That's the real question. And if so, was it necessary for him to lie? Because if it was, then there are absolutes that conflict, and therefore you have to choose the greater of the goods or the lesser of the evils, or just go to this situational thing and say whatever gets you out of there to preserve your life. Well, he goes to Nob, to the tabernacle. Why would he go there? Well, in the Old Testament, a number of people thought that being in the physical presence of God in either the tabernacle or in the temple later on was a place of safety. You will read a number of places where people went into the sanctuary and they thought their attackers would never get there because the physical presence of God was there and they would protect him. And maybe that was the thought of David. If I can get to the tabernacle, no one will get me there. But that doesn't seem like that's his thought, because when he comes, he becomes afraid immediately, and he says, I've come for some bread. Now, did you think about that at all when I read it? Why would you go to the tabernacle for bread? Well, if he went home to his parents, he could find bread there, but I'm sure Saul knew that, in fact, remember the ruse was before, well, David went back to the feast at his parents' house. So he's probably sending men down to Bethlehem to find David there. So, well, that's not going to work. But couldn't have David gone anywhere else, anyone's home, and say, hey, look, I need some bread. Can you help me out? He was a hero in Israel. Certainly someone would have given him some bread. Lots of bread. But he goes to the tabernacle. It's kind of like going, having a choice between going to Giant Eagle or Advanced Auto Parts for food. See, at Advanced Auto Parts, they got those cheese peanut butter crackers. That's about it. And you say, oh, those crackers are good. I think I'll go there. I don't think so. So he goes there and he gets a little bit of bread, but he has to lie to do it. And then he asks for a sword because he sees Doeg there. He knows his life is possibly in danger. And he says to himself, I think, if I had that sword, I'd be fixed. Question. What did that sword do for Goliath? Did it protect him from danger? What's this guy thinking? And he says, well, the reason I need a sword is because the king's business required that I get onto it with a lot of haste. I had to leave right away. I didn't have time to pick up my own sword. Now, let's think about that for just a moment or two. You come and you need bread. So the king sent you on important business with no provisions to sustain your life. And he sent you on important business that might put your life at risk without a sword. How are you going to get it done? Does that sound like what the king would... Well, no, that doesn't sound right. Another question. David, if you didn't have time to pack a meal before you left, and if you didn't have time to pick up a sword before you left, how do you have time now to pick up a sword and grab some bread? This just isn't adding up. You're lying, aren't you? Oh, the jig's up. Get me out of here. So he goes off to where he thinks he's going to be safe, and he finds out they recognize him. Now, why do you think they recognized him there? Well, back up just a second. What did he just pick up at the tabernacle? Goliath's sword. Now, remember, this is no little Swiss Army knife. This is a big thing. Those people in Gath who knew of Goliath because he grew up there, they would say, "Hey, that's Goliath's sword. We know who you are." Duh. What was he thinking? That's the problem. When you're not thinking, or when you're out of the will of God, you're not thinking. And by the grace of God, he got out of there. And fortunately lived to learn a lesson. What lesson did he learn? Turn with me to Psalm 34. And there I'll close. Psalm 34, but before we start reading at verse 1, look at the superscription there. That's part of the inspired text. It says, "A psalm of David when he changed his behavior before Abimelech." Now, Abimelech is more than likely a word that describes the title of Achish. Achish is his name. Who drove him away and he departed. So this psalm is being written right after 1 Samuel 21 takes place. David's lied and lied and lied and lied, all for the purpose of the situational ethic of preserving his life. "I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. My soul shall make her boast in the Lord. The humble shall hear thereof and be glad. Oh, magnify the Lord with me, and let us exalt his name together. I sought the Lord, and he heard me, and delivered me from all my fears." Two key words. First, all, and then secondly, my fears. Here I am. I've put myself in a situation, partly beyond my ability to control. Saul's after me, but I went here and I went here. I became afraid, and he has delivered me from all my fears. "I sought the Lord, and he heard me and delivered me from all my fears. They looked unto him and were lightened, and their faces were not ashamed. This poor man cried, and the Lord heard him and saved him out of all his troubles. The angel of the Lord encampeth round about them that fear him and delivereth them. Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man that comes up with wonderful ways of delivering himself." Oh, wait a minute. "Blessed is the man that trusteth in him." All throughout 1 Samuel 21, did you read anywhere that David is saying, "Lord, what would you have me to do?" "Oh, fear the Lord, ye saints, for there is no want to them that fear him. The young lions do lack and suffer long, but they that seek the Lord shall not want any good thing. Now, that doesn't sound right in some of our English. Let me rephrase it this way. But they that seek the Lord shall not be found wanting of any good thing. Come, ye children, hearken unto me. I will teach you the fear of the Lord. What man is he that desireth life and loveth many days that he may see good? Keep thy tongue from evil and thy lips from speaking guile, just like I did. It ain't gonna work. You try to lie your way out of situations, and the sovereign God of the universe knows better. And when a man is out of the will of God, the world quickly detects it and they know the jig is up. Depart from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. The eyes of the Lord are upon the righteous, and His ears are open unto the cry. The face of the Lord is against them that do evil, to cut off the remembrance of them from the earth. The righteous cry, and the Lord heareth and delivereth them out of all their troubles. The Lord is nigh unto them that are of a broken heart, and saveth such as of a contrite spirit. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivereth out of them all. He keepeth all his bones, not one of them is broken. Evil shall slay the wicked, and they that hate the righteous shall be desolate. The Lord redeemeth the soul of his servants, and none of them that trust in him shall be desolate. Let me sum up Psalm 34 this way. Man, was I a fool, David said. I'm out here seeking this one universal law of protecting myself, and I'm breaking every other one of God's laws. And if only I would have trusted Him, I would have found His protection. It is never right to do wrong in order to produce good. It is never right to do wrong in order to save life. There is another option. God has it in His will. He is sovereign to accomplish it. Trust Him and do right. That's Psalm 34. I wouldn't doubt that some of us here this morning have learned this one by experience. I hope that we all learn it. Because it is the only thing that preserves real life. Let's pray. Father, there might be one here this morning who are finding themselves in a situation where they might even fear for life. Maybe it's not that bad. Maybe it's just they're fearing for the good things in life. Maybe it's just they're fearing of a reputation, a loss of some good thing. And they're tempted to violate your will in order to hold on to that which they think is necessary. Father, help us to realize this morning, help that one to realize that it is never right to do wrong in order to produce good. Lord, help us, each and every one of us, to recognize that You are the sovereign God of the universe, that this is Your world. And while evil men and women may do much evil, in the end, Your will be accomplished. On earth as it is in heaven. Lord, you are the God who gives us our daily bread. You are the God who protects us. You encamp around us and deliver us. Lord, may we rest in your goodness. Trust in your provision. And walk in your will. In Jesus' precious name I pray. Amen.